Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 1:47 p.m. That is Pacific Summer Time. Today is August 21st. And majority of markets were in positive territory in here today. But I think the overriding question is whether the pattern we see on the S&P 500 is a top or a consolidation. There is a temptation to think that it is a top formation, but let's think about that for a moment. If we think about the way that we break down top formation development at the chart seminar, then there is type 1, type 2, and type 3. There is type 1, which is characterized by acceleration. So the run-up that we had in 2017 had some acceleration, and there was definitely that characteristic, and there was a wide overextension relative to the trend mean, which did look likely to be unwound, and it was unwound within the space of less than 2 weeks. And when you get that kind of pullback following such an impressive advance, and particularly considering that we'd had such a very big move between the beginning of 2016 and the end of 2017, it was I think reasonable to expect that we would have a period of consolidation. Medium-term corrections generally last for anything between, six months to 2 years. In the course of this bull market, over the last decade, there have been three significant 18-month consolidations, and we're coming towards the end of the 18th month of this consolidation. So I think it is a very good time to be asking, is this a top or is it a medium-term corrective phase? Type 2 tops are massive reactions against the prevailing trend. So the massive reaction we had against the acceleration was a type 2 characteristic. We had an additional type 2 characteristic in the latter part of 2018, and the market pulled back very sharply, pulled back by 19.8%. So it hasn't quite been the 20% pullback that would characterize it as a correction by the definition that some people like to abide by, and that ensures that this stock market expansion is the longest in at least a century. Well, quite often after a massive reaction against the prevailing trend, you'll see a period of right-hand extension where people start to ask, what's really happened? Where is the evidence for a significantly greater decline than we've already seen? Or is this a buying opportunity? And that kind of to and fro gives way to a ranging phase. Well, we had a very impressive rebound in the first quarter of this year, and subsequently the market has been ranging in the region of the previous peaks. Well, therefore we've had a type 2 top formation, and that's held up the market. There's one big difference between tops and consolidations. It's generally at a period when you get a profound change in terms of a monetary policy and the availability of credit that you get top formations. Whereas right now what we're in fact seeing is central banks falling over themselves to provide additional stimulus. What was I thought was particularly interesting today was the Fed minutes, when they said that they viewed the interest rate cut that took place in July as an insurance cut, and they reiterated their view that it is a mid-cycle slowdown, but that they stand willing to implement further stimulative measures should the need arise. So we did have some tightening of policy in 2018, and that is now swiftly being unwound. the big question that is on the minds of all investors at this stage is whether they tightened too much in 2018, and is that contributing to top formation development? The jury is going to be out on that until we see a sustained move to new high ground. But the one thing that I'm struck by in simply ignoring all other factors and simply appreciating this, the action we're seeing on the chart is simple. That we've seen the S&P 500 bounce twice from the region of the trend mean in the course of the last 3 months. And all other factors being equal, this looks like a bullish consolidation. Then, if we start to bring back in some of the other factors, there is the potential that we are in the bubble phase of this bull market. It's already been the longest expansion in the last century, although I do think that that is a false way of thinking about the market, because the 1987 crash was a medium-term correction within a secular bull market. It simply pulled back by the 20%, and the arbitrary 20% pullback and how that is used to define a correction, it really doesn't paint an accurate picture of just how big the bull market was in the 1980s and the 1990s. But what we are seeing is that the Federal Reserve is now cutting interest rates. The federal government has decided that they're going to allow themselves an additional $1.2 trillion worth of spending over the course of the next 18 months. The ECB is getting ready to initiate a raft of stimulative measures. So what and We have to also remind ourselves that we are coming towards the end of the summer period, and the vast majority of Europe is only just beginning to come back from holiday. The DAX index has extended its rebound over the last couple of days, and it is now back above the trend mean. So that is about as desirable an outcome for the bulls as one might wish for. And if we look at the daily chart, then this has been a pretty impressive rebound. Well, obviously, it's going to have to hold the low from 5 sessions ago, but this does look like there is potential for additional upside. When we look at the CAC index in France, well, it has bounced from the region of the trend mean 3 times so far this year, and it is now not so far away from the upper side of this range, which has persisted for over 2 years already. This does look like a market that has the potential to pop on the upside. When we then think about how the Italian market is doing, despite the fact that the banks remain under a great deal of pressure, then the index has rebounded from the region of the trend mean over the course of the last few days. Well, it pulled back very violently, and one swallow does not a summer make, so we're going to have to see additional upside. But monetary policy beats most other factors most of the time, and the ECB does look likely to embark upon additional stimulative measures. They are probably at the point now where they are willing to admit that ending the quantitative easing program at the end of December of last year was probably not the wisest decision, and that also holds out the prospect that they may have to expand the size of the balance sheet more than they would otherwise have wished to. So I think when we think about the size of the ECB's balance sheet at 4.6 trillion euro, there is ample potential for it to expand further, particularly when we think about the size of the Fed's balance sheet. And the Fed's balance sheet is around $3.7 trillion. Well, they also have ample scope here to extend additional quantitative easing measures. The one thing we know is that when the ECB tried to take €1 trillion out of circulation, it almost created a depression in Europe. And it has required a significant additional input, injection of additional funds to arrest that decline. They're going to have to do the same now because they stopped their quantitative easing program early. The Federal Reserve is likely to be learning the lesson over the course of the next while that you can't simply withdraw liquidity from the system and expect the market to or expect asset prices to continue to hold up. That suggests that they are going to have to engage in additional stimulus. Treasury yields came all the way back down to 1.5%. That represents the lower side of the range. There is a short-term overbought condition. When we look at the futures price, then it does look really quite likely that we're going to see at least some pause in consolidation. This has been a really very consistent advance, and it does look like, or I think it looks likely, that we could see some consolidation that could last anything up to about 2 months. We've had three different occasions so far this year where we've had at least a 2 month consolidation in the price after a run up, and that does look likely again at this stage. Bunds and the kinds of ironies we're seeing in the market today are really quite profound. The fact that Germany tried to sell 2.2 billion euros worth of 30-year bonds with a zero coupon and weren't quite able to sell the entire allotment, but they did manage to sell 845 billion, excuse me, million dollars worth. That was, I think, a rather impressive outcome. It does help to highlight that perhaps bond investors are not quite yet willing to be the turkeys that vote for Christmas. And buying a bond that is guaranteed to not have a positive return when it matures in 30 years' time is perhaps a bridge too far in the short term. But we have to at least pay some due consideration to the fact that the German economy is not yet in a recession. There is the significant potential that it could go into recession, and that Europe is on the precipice of a recession. That virtually ensures that the stimulative measures that the ECB are going to announce in September are going to be rather explicit in their aims to continue to support the economy. Well, bunds are really quite overextended, and I think it does look likely we're going to get some consolidation. But the fact that they finished off the lows in here today was, I think, a rather important sign that there is continued demand here against a background where negative interest rates are something that is catalytic in terms of the way that people calculate value as a result of the convexity of the market to interest rates. And this is evidence of a bubble in the fixed income markets. And it is affecting just about everything. Everything from property to asset prices. And the fact that we have continued very strong performance from the consumer staples sector, from the group of companies that we regard as autonomies. And if we simply go back and think about the autonomies that David Knight came up with, the group of companies we regard as autonomies in 2012, because it was obvious at the time that there was going to be a time when governments were going to become so severely indebted that it was going to be a problem, that the prowess of the world's largest companies, the fact that they are multinational and that their headquarters could in fact be anywhere in the world, that the reliability of their cash flows is considerably better than that of a significant number of governments, and that they are leveraged to the growth of the global consumer, that they're leveraged to technological innovation, whether they are the innovators themselves or whether they are the purchasers of the innovation in order to drive their own competitiveness and I guess the and efficiency gains. And of course, then they also benefit from the secular bear market that we have in energy as a result of the game-changing sources of additional supply that are coming through as a result of the shale boom. So these types of companies are doing really rather well against a background where they're being valued not only for their cash flows, but as bond proxies. Then, of course, we have the fact that companies that have adopted subscription business models that are characterized by the reliability of their cash flows continue to advance. And Visa is another one of those companies. MasterCard is teaming up with Apple to provide Apple Card services, and that has got a very similar pattern. But Microsoft is in a similar situation. It has got a clear pattern of outperformance, and we can see the commonality that we're seeing in these types of shares. These represent the I think the thin end of the wedge in terms of the outperformance we're seeing in markets. Adobe was one of the first companies to adopt the subscription business model. Then you do have to have the cash flows, and you do have to have the profits to pay dividends, and or at least to have the prospect of paying dividends. There is no doubting that Netflix is a subscription business model company, but they don't have any profits. And the share has now broken downwards. That was a phenomenal acceleration we saw in the first half of 2018. And now we've had the massive reaction against the prevailing trend, and then a very classic period of right-hand extension. And now the market is breaking down from that period of right-hand extension. Now, this does look like completing top formation characteristics, and it does highlight the fact that investors are becoming more discerning. They are putting a premium on the reliability of cash flows and the ability to increase dividends, particularly in a background where we have over $16 trillion worth of bonds that have got negative yields. That's also the reason why gold is doing better, that it has a real physical presence in the world, and it is of reasonably limited supply. This incredible advance we've seen over the course of the last 10 weeks is looking still quite consistent, and we have these steps one above another. That doesn't mean, however, that we can't have a pullback and a consolidation following an impressive breakout from a lengthy range. It is quite normal to see a period of right-hand extension, and I think it's arguable we really haven't seen that yet in gold. But the breakout and the ability of gold to have sustained this advance does suggest we're in a new bull market, and that in a new bull market for commodities, then significant pullbacks are buying opportunities. So there is likely to be more volatility in gold on occasions, and that's quite normal for the market. Then when we think about oil prices, well, the oil price was in positive territory today, but it was well off its highs. It's still trending downwards, and it has not really been able to establish itself in a forthright manner above the $60 area. When we then look at West Texas Intermediate, there are a significant number of the shale properties have break-evens in the order of about $50. That's one of the reasons why it has bounced from that level three times now since June. Now the question is whether it can continue to do so. The high yield spread has been reasonably contained over the course of August, but it is at the upper side of this range. It is generally when high yield spreads start pushing above 5% or 500 basis points that we start to see a meaningful impact on the wider market. By the same token, it is when they start coming back down that we start to see a lot of interest flowing back into the stock market. I do rather think that we are at the period in time where we could anticipate a bubble. Markets tend to price in the easing from a change of central bank policy rather early, and that is certainly one of the factors in the rebound we've seen in markets over the course of the last 7 or 8 months. Now the question is, are we going to get the kind of speculative activity that could push markets higher? I do think it's likely that if investors really do conclude that we are in a negative interest rate environment and that are going to be an increasingly large number of assets that have got negative yields, well, then that is eventually going to filter through to equities, that people will start to look at these companies with strong cash flows and view them for their bond-like characteristics. Could we perhaps see an environment where equities could have a negative yield? I think that's an interesting question, and it's not beyond the bounds of possibilities before this bull market, in fact, does end. We're in a bubble phase for bonds already. There is the potential that we could move into a bubble phase for the equity markets, and we know where that bubble phase is likely to occur. It's in those companies that have got particularly the technology sector, but most particularly the companies that have adopted a subscription business model, that are those most likely to enter clear bubbly territory. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I wish all the best to all of you.